The wonderful thing about it is that nobody gets what their doctrine says.
Webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment that you saw yourself in God and God in you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for April the 23rd, 2015, from the home of redemptionism, where we love every train of thought coming from the Station of Freedom. We're coming to you from the highly sanitized GR Studios in Nashville, Tennessee, where with Mel Martin we say, if you want to see the devil, tell a Christian there's no hell. And here from way down at the far end of the tree-lined boulevard of holiness, grace and peace in Houston, Texas, is that great unteacher, the founder and president of the Gospel Revolution, Mr. Michael Williams. G'day, Mike.
G'day, Barris. You always like doing those things to get me tickled right before I get online with you.
I want to start you laughing and keep you laughing from the beginning to the end, mate.
Well, that's not too hard to do anymore. I think I've just turned into a giggle box in my old age.
I don't get that because, I mean...
Supposed to get old and grumpy, right?
Well, no, but it's the end of the world is coming, and you just carry on like it's any other day.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
What are you, a Pollyanna about the end of the world?
We went through this last week in on the end of the world stuff. It's really funny, Barris. I don't know. If we covered that same material over and over and over every week for the next year, I would never get tired of it. And, you know, the thing of it is that we would also learn something new from it every time.
We probably would. But, you know, we're up against those heavyweights. Pardon the pun. Heavyweights like T.D. Jakes and heavyweights like John Hagee, now, there's a heavyweight. I mean, these guys have got a multi-million-dollar machine behind them, churning out books. Anyway, enough of the end of the world. How you doing?
I've had a small reoccurrence of allergies. Disappointing. I was thinking my Singulair that I've been on for 2 months was working like a charm, but some of the charm has worn off.
Is that a tablet? Is it a medication?
Yeah, Singulair. It is a prescription medication for allergies, and it seemed to be working really well until it didn't. So,
Gospel Revolution.
Michael, this week I launched a Facebook group, a new Facebook group called Theo History. And I called it Theo History because all of the other .coms were taken that I wanted. So I just thought, keep it short and sharp. People can email me and ask to join, and I'll be happy to let that happen. But it's not a forum for diverse opinions to be polished and debated. This is only a research site. And it is for the research and publication of the theological history of redemptionism from circa AD 33, from the resurrection through to the Council of Nicaea in the very late 300s, 381 or so. So from the resurrection through to 400 AD is what we are researching. And there are some heavyweights there. Bob Hines is helping me to develop a credible, valid, reasonable history. We're not trying to make something up here. What we're trying to do is really look for those things that essentially the Roman Catholic Church has deliberately hidden over the years because they wanted to fudge the trail with the apostolic succession problem that they had. So we are called Theo History. Just go into Facebook. If you're on Facebook, go into Facebook, go up to the top search bar. I'll make the necessary changes in the group so that you can ask to be added to the group and look for Theo History if you're interested. Now, if you're not interested in this, I promise you this will be it'll be dry as old cookies. It'll be just so dry. It'll be just like eating crackers without water. So only if you're really interested in the history of theology, and it's not really church history, Michael, it's the history of theology is what we're looking at. So I'm excited.
Wonderful. I've got one question.
Yep.
Why was this not cleared with the office?
It wasn't cleared with the office because the office might not have approved it, but now now it's too bloody late. You can't.
Freedom, freedom, freedom. Boy, I'm telling you what, it's you know, give them an inch, they take a mile.
And there you go.
No, that's I actually, of course, I'm delighted. And I'm delighted is the way it happened. I don't think people really fully get how interdependent we are upon each other and how independent we are from each other when it comes to whatever it is we want to express or do. That, you know, these are lives that have come together for, you know, for a really wonderful, wonderful purpose. And I think this sounds like a really good idea. So I hold on a minute. I've got to meet with the committee. I'll get back with you in just a second. Okay.
Waiting. Waiting. Dial one if you want permissions. Dial two if you want the pledge.
Okay, I'm back.
What was there? What was? I'm shaking.
We did it.
You know that God. Vote. You know that God so loved the world that He did not send a committee.
There's 12 of us on the committee.
Oh gosh!
And it was almost unanimous. There was 11 of us, and so the one who was the dissenter, you'll be glad to know that we just stoned him to death. So.
Oh, yeah. A ritual stoning.
Yes. Take long either.
No, I saw that. Yeah, you guys are practiced. Nothing like a ritual stoning to break up a day, I tell you.
When you're feeling down or you got the case of the blues, why don't you listen to the Gospel Revolution?
Hey, this week, a cardinal, I forget his name, in America died, a Roman Catholic cardinal, and what made this person very different was he was the guy, he may have been a bishop, I think he was a cardinal, and he was the guy that said, we have a zero tolerance for pedophilia in the church, and one proven case, you're out, and you can go to court for all we care, we're not going to cover you anymore. Now, this guy, I wish I had his name up here because I'd love to honor the man. That takes guts in the Roman Catholic Church to have stood up and been the first one to do it.
Well, that's for sure.
But the reason why that was important to me was because of another story that I picked up this week, and that is that the Catholic Church has paid over $150 million over pedophilia. This is only in the USA, as near as I can tell. But here are the astounding figures, Michael. I'm reading from Tempo.com here. In the fallout, senior church officials acknowledged they had protected priests responsible for the sexual abuse of children. The report said there were 657 allegations of underage sexual abuse by priests. If 657 people came forward, we know there's a whole bunch who didn't come forward. Exactly. Of which 130 have been recognized and 243 are still under investigation. In other words, that $150 million they've spent has only been for less than a third of all of these allegations, less than a third. So the amount of money this may end up costing the Catholic Church is going to go into it's very reasonable to presume it'll be over $1 billion. That's a billion with a B. I can't see why that would not happen, because you have, and it's hard to know whether the Catholic Church in America even has that money. I mean, a lot of it gets sent off to the Vatican, from my understanding. And I mean, what happens when the Catholic Church goes bankrupt?
Well, it's not going to go bankrupt from the Vatican end. That's for sure.
Yeah, you bet.
There's a little bit more than a billion there.
The gentleman who I referred to before, who's just died, was Cardinal Francis George. He has the most amazing story. This is a guy that pushed the Catholic Church in America to a zero tolerance of pedophilia amongst its priests. Uh-huh. The church still is coming to terms with the fact that it actually helped to protect pedophile priests. But this guy nearly didn't get into high school, nearly didn't get into seminary because he had a limp from when he was a child. He was disabled. But he got in, and He earns two doctorates, spoke Italian, French, Spanish, English, and a few other languages. A lot of people call him one of the most intellectual Catholic leaders in America, and I just want to honor that man because it would take guts in a machinery like the Roman Catholic Church. It would take serious courage to stand up and say, enough is enough. We've done it wrong and we need to change. So Cardinal George, we want to, and where is Cardinal George right now, mate? He's Catholic. He would have gone to purgatory, I'm thinking.
According to his doctrine, the wonderful thing about it is that nobody gets what their doctrine says.
No one gets. That's good.
Nobody gets what their doctrine says, and they would all. I know they are all very happy about that. We know that the good cardinal, standing for or against these horrible crimes that's taken place in the Catholic Church, is in the very same place that Christ Himself is.
Bring your tithe and bring your shame, bring your guilt and bring your pain. Don't you know that's not your name? You will always be much more to me. Every day I wrestle with the voices that keep telling me I'm not right, but that's alright, 'cause I hear a voice and it calls me every day when others say I'll never be enough. And greater is the one living inside of me than he who is living in the world. Yeah.
I want to move on to a Pew Research Center story. I looked at this story, and it's all across the web. I could have gone to the Huffington Post or Pew Research Center itself, but I decided to go to the BaptistStandard.com. And the reason I'm going to the Baptist Standard, you won't get very much more conservative than the Baptist Standard. And it's headlined, Analysis, 7.5 million Americans lost their religion since 2012. Now, this is 3 years. When I came to the USA, it was 1 million people a year in both the UK and the USA who were voting with their feet to leave Christianity. By about 4 years ago, it had risen to 2 million people a year. And they're saying now that 7.5 million Americans lost their religion since 2012. Is this good news? Is it bad news?
We are right in the middle of the most active transition in cultural history, I think, bears for many centuries. The gospel revolution stands in the most unique. Here we are watching this take place, the greatest escape from any religion at all taking place on planet Earth. I guess this is probably the largest that we've ever seen. So as you say these things, it just elevates in my heart and my mind the importance that we're out there, that this voice is being heard. I don't know of anybody who can even address the questions. I would like to hear the questions that these people had when they left. Because I know, Barris, we could answer the vast majority of their questions. Because most of their questions are about the involvement of God in daily life. That's why they have abandoned religion. You know, their daughter didn't get healed. The husband prayed for a job, didn't get a job. But now if you listen to Joel Osteen now, it just doesn't make any difference at what point you are on the map. God's got it all figured out. And even if you lose your job, now he preaches that you'll never lose your job if you trust the Lord. He preaches that God will always protect you. So then his sermon last week was, but if you do lose your job, even if all catastrophe breaks loose, it's for your good.
Hang on. you're listening to Joel Osteen.
I'm trying to learn something.
Well, let me tell you what Joel Osteen, and let you, you can learn this from Joel Osteen, Your Best Life Now. That's his book, Your Best Life Now. I'd love to see him front up to a village in Africa where they don't have water wells and say, this is your best life now. Joel, yeah. Oh, dear.
It's a mess.
It is a mess. But I think that we are living in the biggest revolution, which is why we call it the gospel revolution. We're living in the biggest revolution in religion in the last 500 years since the Reformation.
I think that's true, Beerus.
Did you put it in the paper? Did you write it down in stone? Did you send a short text message or fax it from your home? Did you put it in a billboard? Make a little sign? Email or do Facebook, anyway is fine. Gotta get out the gospel. Gotta get out the gospel. GospelRevolution.com. Yeah, baby.
This week I started a new segment, Michael, and I'm going to call it the Redemptionist of the Week. And this redemptionist was an amazing man. He was a literary giant. He was a Scotsman. He was the driving force behind such names as C.S. Lewis, Tolkien, who wrote the Hobbit series, Madeleine L'Engle, G.K. Chesterton, who had to be the heaviest heavyweight of Catholic intelligence of the last century, Walter de la Mare, the poet, Lewis Carroll, of Alice in Wonderland fame, Mark Twain. We all know Mark Twain. He used to hang out with people like Tennyson, Dickens, Wilkie Collins, Trollope, Ruskin, Lewes, Thackeray, Longfellow, Walt Whitman. I mean, the list just goes on and on. His name is George MacDonald, who lived between 1824 and 1905, wrote a whole bunch of books, and actually may have been the first person to write science fantasy or religio-fantasy. I don't know how you'd call it, but things like The Hobbit and C.S. Lewis's Narnia Chronicles. And this guy seems to have affected at least a whole 2 to 3 generations with his thinking. He was a self-confessed universalist, and that's what he called it. I would call him a redemptionist.
Yeah.
And why I admire this guy is he took original sin and he took a predestination and he took Calvinism and he said, what a crock. That is just so wrong.
Wow.
So for us, he is this week our redemptionist of the week.
Well, wonderful. And he's a MacDonald. You and I both have ancestors that are MacDonalds. I wonder if he's just one of the family.
Oh, he's just all in the family. See, our side of the family is better, though. Jeffrey. Now, Jeffrey, his relations are on TBN.
Oh, I know.
We just shouldn't talk about his side of the family, really, should we?
It's a pretty popular family. I don't know. I'm sure that Jeff's going to the family reunion this year.
Oh, dear. I don't even know what to say to that. Good luck there, Jeff. But I wanted to underline, there are so many more people out there who are redemptionists and who have been redemptionists.
Exactly.
If you really look at the base theology driving many people, redemptionism was there. People like Lincoln, people like the most quoted theologian of the last century, William Barclay, wrote 18 volumes just on the New Testament alone. The guy was an intellectual giant. Self-confessed redemptionist.
Yeah.
We're not used to digging up these people and looking into their lives and seeing what they believed. Even C.S. Lewis's teachings betray his belief in a God that was much bigger than the God that Christianity would have us believe in.
Mm-hmm. Even Tesla, one of my favorite characters in history, Mr. Lightning, I think they call him, he found out more about lightning and electricity than any other human had ever known. Even he, who was an avowed atheist all of his life, and when he came up to near the end of his life, he also was, he not only became a believer in God, he had no doctrine, though, because he never had embraced any of these things before. But before his death, he acknowledged that there is reason to believe that there is a God, but the only way that he would could believe that there is a God is if everyone is equal.
How about that? Whenever you talk like that, you remind me of W.C. Fields, that famous American comedian who, when he was on his deathbed, his wife found him thumbing through a Bible, and he was a confirmed atheist. And she said, W.C., what are you doing? And he said, looking for loopholes, dear, just looking for loopholes.
Exactly.
Gospel Revolution.
This is a pledge month, and Bernie, we miss you. But, yeah, let's, oh dear. Bernie, we miss you, but we're still doing it. We're still asking for money.
Still begging and pleading and making promises for heaven and avoid hell. And
hey, did you catch Jeff's movie this weekend? No Seed Faith Here?
Yeah.
I thought that was excellent. And it's so true.
Yeah, I think Jeff is developing one of my characteristics, and that is you drop the bomb and then you teach on it.
Well, it's working for me. I'm enjoying this. So how's the pledge drive going?
The monthlies, we've made minimal gains there, but the people, as usual, Barris, have really been stepping up to the plate. We're just about at the end of the 3 weeks. We're going to go through the end of the month, and people have made a real, real difference for us. I want to make this prophecy. If we continue making the gains that we're making now through the end of July, we will have brought a zero balance to all debts for the ministry. Barris, we need Jeff right now to come in. Not later, right now.
Right.
We'll do it like Norval used to say.
Right now.
You gotta have faith right now.
Right now.
Now faith. Now faith. Not after a while faith.
Right now, Jeff. Now,
oh,
Jeff.
Hey, right now. So, right now, Jeff. Not after a while, Jeff. Now.
Well, thanks, Norval. I mean, Mike. Not so many GRs actually know Norval Hayes like you and I. And I know you're making fun of them, and it's easy to do. But thank you for that great introduction. All right. Let's just announce all the names who have given thus far in our 2015 Spring Pledge Drive. And we want to start off with our dear brother in Studio City, California, and that's Danny Meniscanians. Then we have Arthur Wirtz in Brandon, Manitoba. Anonymous in Chandler, Arizona.
Is that a Mr. Anonymous or a Mrs. Anonymous?
That would be a Mrs. or a Ms.
Well, how do you know that? I mean, how can they be anonymous and you know that their gender?
Because I've spoken to them. They're anonymous to the listeners. They're not anonymous to us.
Oh, sneaky.
Sneaky. You never know who's listening. And we don't. All right. And then we have Linda Villand in Madison, Wisconsin. And now let's get to our official sponsors list. That's the first category up. And we've got Mike and Letty Kolb in Aurora, Colorado. Ron Fox in Chula Vista, California. Alan Davis in Chipley, Florida. Anonymous in Edmonton, Alberta. Pep Washburn in Marshfield, Wisconsin. Another Anonymous in Salford, Ontario. We have a few Anonymi this time around.
Anonymi?
Yeah, that's plural for Anonymous. Didn't you know that?
I knew that platypoi or platypussies, platycats? Is anonymous for platypus, but no, I didn't know that about anonymous. Thanks, but
if it wasn't a word, it is now. I'm using the Latin derivative there.
Oh man, see, that's why I'm lost. I'm into Greek. I don't get the Latin at all. But I honor you, Jeff.
Yeah, it's my old Catholic upbringing. You can't get rid of it. All right, let's continue on with Tom Tonsky in Canton, Ohio. Mike and Joyce Camelotis in Mesa, Arizona. Alan Terry in Spokane, Washington. Tim and Beth Knappenberger in Canton, Ohio. Lori Abraham in Red Deer, Alberta. Paul Viggers in New Milton, Hampshire, United Kingdom. Jackie Barnard in Wichita City, Arizona. Robert Hines in McDonough, Georgia. Todd and Angela Gray in LaForte City, Iowa. Bernie Rouse in Cadillac, Michigan. Michael Bond in Marietta, Georgia. Dale Van Sickle in Lady Lake, Florida. Stephen Mary Keller in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And Donald Wynn in Wasilla, Alaska.
Yeehaw, let's hear it for the official sponsors.
Yes, there we go. Now we're on to our producers list. And we're going to start that off with Richard and Pat Salonen in Laurium, Michigan. John Newbigging in Edinburgh, Scotland. Steve and Chris A.M. Panther in Waterloo, Iowa. Robert and Linda Parks in Mobile, Alabama. Carrie and Rita Waitman in Whitehall, Montana. Betty Cochran in Atoka, Oklahoma. And Jerry and Susan Berman in Longwood, Florida. And then now to our executive producers.
You are going to explain these in a minute, aren't you? The differences?
I was going to leave that up to you. You confused me so easily. Executive producers, drum roll, we have Cliff and Katie Griffin in Gainesville, Georgia, Billy Thompson, Wachuca City, Arizona, Brad and Holly Wilson in Queen Creek, Arizona, Al Vitale in Gainesville, Georgia, Tom and Linda Wilby in Fredericton, New Brunswick, Cookie Davy Duck in Castor, Alberta, Canada, Muriel Alexandrowski in North Palm Beach, Florida, James and Gail Gustafson in Esteban, Saskatchewan, Canada, Rob Vicanti, in Ottertail, Minnesota, Leslie Kaza in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, Wayne Jensen in Bingham Lake, Minnesota, and Anonymous in Kalamazoo, Michigan. And that last Anonymous is a very new Anonymous, and we welcome you, sir.
Oh, Sir Anonymous.
That is a Sir Anonymous. All right, let's clarify and explain why we are going with three categories of pledges. Originally, I sent out an email saying that anybody who gives monthly of $10, $49 a month would be an official sponsor, and then a producer would be above $50 a month. But we really do have to acknowledge the folks who really dig deep. And so for those who give $150 or more a month or an equivalent of such, they are in the executive producer class and or category. And so that's how we have clarified the structure. So we have official sponsor, producer, and executive producer.
Well, let's just go over those again. Firstly, this month, every new donor is going to get a pharisectomy certificate. A pharisectomy certificate acknowledges that your inner Pharisee has been removed by the dexterous touch of the master and teacher himself, Michael Williams. Every monthly pledge of between $10 and $50 will be awarded with an official sponsor certificate. This simply says that you have helped to sponsor the show and indeed the whole gospel revolution. Now, every monthly pledge of over $50 a month will be awarded with an official producer certificate. These are real producerships, and unlike the ones in Movie Land, we will authenticate and endorse these producerships whenever we're asked. You can put producer on your business cards and use its authentic value wherever these real endorsements are accepted. Every monthly pledge of over $150 a month or $1,800 annual will be awarded with official executive producer certificates. Now, an executive producer is the person in any movie or any radio show or in any production at all that actually moves the money along to the point where without their help, it just wouldn't plain happen.
It wouldn't get produced.
Not get produced. Exactly. And so that's why we've made these different gradations, because sometimes just saying thank you is not enough, and we want you to feel thanked in a very real way. So your certificates will be going out at the end of this pledge drive, which is just another week or so away. Soon. When?
Soon. It ends in 8 days.
It's a week away. So get your certificate today. Even if it's, look, if it was only a pharyngectomy certificate, if all you did was send us $10, you'll get an official sponsor certificate. But if all you sent us with $10 a month, what is it? It's less than a couple of packets of cigarettes a month. And if you sign up for a $10 a month pledge to the Gospel Revolution, I'm going to tell you right now, that $120 a year is going to make all the difference for us in getting the gospel out in areas where we can't personally reach. We're here in the U.S., but people like Moses Garter, getting the gospel out, $120, a lot of money.
Yeah, and I know that that was a good number of names that I read off there. And however, most of those
Did you say that was a number of good names or a good number of names?
That was a good number of names and a number of good names, both.
I would not call Anonymous a good name. Mr. Hello, what's your name? Mr. Anonymous. Yeah.
Well, good.
No, I don't think so.
There's good people behind those names, regardless of the name. And but these people, for the most part, most of them give really practically every pledge drive. Okay, they give every pledge drive. Some of them have been monthly supporters for a long time. We really only have less than a handful of new monthly givers. So the drive here is the major push on this drive is we need new monthly supporters. And we know you're out there listening. I know you think about it every quarter when we're talking about it. And we're asking you to execute, even if you just start out with $10 a month. And just so you get in the habit, you know you might be able to do more, but start out with that. Maybe that's where you want to start. But we are definitely looking for new monthly pledgers, additional monthly pledgers. And, yeah, Mike, are you still there? It's back to you, Mike.
Mike wants to hear from you now. Now, Jeff. Now. Not then. Now, Jeff. See you later, Jeff.
All right. We'll see you. Bye-bye.
Thanks, buddy.
Thank you, Jeff. We hear in your voice that you're working hard. We can always hear in your voice how hard you're working. And let me tell you, Jeff works so hard at trying to maintain his voice so that people won't have to put up with the scratchiness.
And he takes a great deal of medication to stay on top of the game. I mean, every time I call him, he's either going to the store or coming from the store with more Diet Coke. I mean, this guy, he just doesn't rest.
No, that's for sure. And it's not caffeine-free Diet Coke either. It's just Diet Coke. So, yeah, he stays hopped up on caffeine and does his best to keep his voice going. So we do appreciate you and you know that, but it always needs to be said that we couldn't do this part of the job without Jeff, and especially not without any of you that Jeff mentioned your name. You guys are amazing. You always are amazing. I don't know how you do it. I do know why you do it, though, because we've eliminated every reason but one for you to do it.
And that reason is?
We know that reason is you care about other people hearing this message.
That is the one thing that pushes me harder and faster than anything else, Michael, and that is I know how it felt for me to be freed.
Oh, Marisk, if everybody could just stop and recapture that. I'm telling you the stories. There's times I get calls here at the house, and I wish that I had them all recorded of just a quick call, somebody calling that I don't even know who they are. And them saying to me, you know, from wherever in the world they are, Mike, I don't want to take up too much of your time. And I just wanted to let you know that a year ago I started listening, and it has just, I cannot tell you what's happened in finding freedom and knowing this and finding out that all the things that I ever thought about God are just untrue. and finding out why they're not true. And these calls, you know, I get them here at the house. And most of these people that make these phone calls here to my house, you'll never hear from. You'll never know who they are. I sit there and listen to those, and I hang up that phone, Barris. I sit there in the quiet of my home here and try to imagine that the life that I have is real. It's so wonderful. Barris, my life is wonderful.
And there are a couple of words which, above any other words, probably describe it best, and that is rest and freedom.
Rest and freedom and an underlying joy that is so stabilizing. I don't know why I have to say that. It's a stabilizing joy, because I don't want people to think that, you know, it's this, you know, I'm running through the house, you know, with an emotional charge. It is a joy that is so deep. It really is quite amazing, and I'm so grateful for that. I thank you guys. Thank you for listening. Thank you for allowing Barris and I to come into your home. I don't want to sound cheesy at all, because you've got to understand that the life force that is ministered back to us by sharing with you, it is just amazing. In fact, I was reading the other day, and I identified with the words that Paul was saying about how that this life force was literally being ministered back to him. So, it was really, really incredible. In fact, I decided, Barris, that I was going to try my hand at translating the Bible.
You are?
Yeah.
Well, just before we try that, can I just remind our people out there of what we're offering this pledge drive?
Let's do that, because, and again, goodness gracious, thank you, folks. We're pressing hard toward this. We're holding the line on anything that we can without cutting our commitments. I am not going to do that if it comes out of my own pocket, which it has. It's come out of Hazel's pocket, for God's sakes. We are only now down to owing Hazel $300, I think. And we have owed her thousands. And wow. We have owed her thousands, and we're just now back down to just owing her $300 now, of paying her back for stepping up and putting funds into the account, just so that we could continue on. And she would have definitely given it, and I told her that's not going to happen. We will, you know, jot it down. We'll pay it back. She never mentions it. If I did not remember it, it would not be remembered. It would not be mentioned. It would not be brought up. So thank you guys for helping me fulfill my commitments to one of the greatest people in my life ever. And thank you so very much for helping me to keep my promises.
Gospel Revolution.
Now, Michael, you said something about wanting to translate the Bible. I don't know. I thought we had enough of them already.
Well, I tell you, I got to looking at all of them, and I decided we don't. This is not a commitment on my part to translate the Bible. Please don't hold me to this. But over the years...
You're backpedaling already.
I am, big time. Let me tell you what gets lost in translation. Something that has developed in the Gospel Revolution that others have missed, and that is context. When you translate and you cannot follow the context of what you are translating, something gets lost in translation if you don't know the context. So I thought it'd be fun. I took a couple of verses that I thought, you know what, I'm going to translate this. I read through it. I got the context of it to see exactly where this might go. All I did is look up the Greek words. I'm not a scholar by any means on Greek, but I want to show you how easy this is, unless Barris completely shoots me down. Because here's the thing, I mean this, Barris has never heard these verses that I've translated.
We talked last night on the phone, and I kind of hinted, I said, would you like to give me a bit of a heads up on this? And you, what did you say?
No. No, I don't want to give you a heads up.
I hardly had a wink of sleep last night, thanks to you.
I wanted to get the raw reaction to the expertise that Barris has in the Greek. Of the two, Hebrew and Greek, Barris is strongest in the Greek and has a good working knowledge of the Hebrew and has taught me little pointers about how to identify certain things in translation, and it's been very helpful to me. Okay, so Barris, I'm trying my hand, as we've promised the people, I'm trying my hand at translation. You've not known until just now that this is 2 Corinthians chapter 4. I have translated verse 8 and verse 9. The context of this is eventually going to blow people's mind. Let me just go ahead and say that in advance. The same as we went through Romans, Barris, and that said just the opposite to what we thought it said. You know, remember how it's in 10, it says, you know, whosoever shall call upon the name of the Lord. The two stalwart verses held in Christianity, whosoever shall call upon the name of the Lord shall be saved. And the other one, so then faith comes by hearing and hearing by the word. We read that in context and found that Paul is challenging those statements, not declaring them.
Amazing.
And then at the end of it, very clearly says, no, it's not anybody that calls on the name of the Lord is going to be saved. And it's not by faith either. For I was found by them that didn't call after me, didn't know me, I rescued people that didn't know anything. So, yeah, it was really quite amazing. I think it's one of the greatest works in study, in context, that I've ever seen. It's so solid in me now. I can't even imagine I ever read that chapter 10 without that context. It's so clear in my brain, Barris. All right, so Barris, I'm going to have you to read 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 8 and verse 9.
What version would you like, mate?
The King James Version.
King Jimmy, here we are. We are troubled on every side, yet not distressed. We are perplexed, but not in despair. Persecuted, but not forsaken. Cast down, but not destroyed.
All right. Now, everybody's familiar with those verses. But do you know what verse it follows? Now, read it. Read again, verse 8 and 9.
We are troubled on every side, yet not distressed. We are perplexed, but not in despair. Persecuted, but not forsaken. Cast down, but not destroyed.
Now read verse 7, the very verse before it.
But we have this treasure in earthen vessels, that the excellency of the power may be of God and not of us.
So we're getting this very strong statement about the power of heaven in us. We have all of this treasure that was in heaven, now in earthen vessels. And then Paul begins to discuss the reality of this treasure being there, that life can get tough. But I want to, and in this translation, I thought that there was more here. And folks, you can go read other translations to this if you want, but I'm going to read this, and I'm going to let Barris go through all of the Greek and see if there's anything that needs to be changed. I mean, really, we're doing this live on here. I've not presented this to Barris to study beforehand, and this is how you learn. You do your best job at something, and then you submit it to somebody you think might know something more than you know. And that's how you learn. You don't ever be afraid of being wrong. Being wrong is the most wonderful thing that ever happened to me. Folks, in all of my Christian life, the most wonderful thing that ever happened to me is to find out I was wrong. So I have no fear of being wrong. All right, so this is my translation. We are being crushed from the outside by a multitude of troubles to the point it feels like an outraged throng of people pressing in every possible direction. Yet on the inside, it feels like the entire universe has opened up to us. We are indeed at a complete and utter loss without any way out of our troubles. But inside, it feels just the opposite. We not only are persecuted when we are present, but we are pursued for the self-same purpose. Yet inside, there is no feeling of being left behind or deserted. We are thrown down prostrate to the ground, but do not be fooled. I am not dead. So now, Barris, I'm going to ask you to read through this, and then you can tell us whether there's any grammatical changes, and then we'll go towards the translation.
You just emailed me this, and I'm reading now from my email. You're saying, we are being crushed from the outside by a multitude of troubles to the point it feels like an outraged. I think I'd take that comma out of behind point, and I'd add in that.
Okay.
To the point that it feels like an outraged throng of people pressing in from every possible direction. Yet on the inside, it feels like the entire universe has opened up to us. We are indeed at a complete and utter loss without any way out of our troubles. But inside, it feels just the opposite. Mm-hmm. We not only are persecuted when we are present, but we are pursued. Is that in the? But we are pursued for the self-same purpose. Yet inside there is no feeling of being left behind nor deserted. We are thrown down prostrate to the ground, but do not be fooled. We are not dead. Okay, that sounds like good, sensible English to me.
Very good. And the people will notice that after I read this through with you the first time, I realized we needed to change from thrown down to we are thrown down instead of but do not be fooled, I am not dead, because of the consistency of him talking about we, that we needed to change that to we are not dead instead of just Paul speaking of himself for continuity there. Hmm. So that's the first of my translation. When we look at it then we see there's obvious grammar questions that have to be answered. I saw that that's not consistent. If he's going with we, then the translation needs to continue with we. And other than that, is there any other points of grammar that really should be changed?
Not in English.
Okay.
I don't know about Greek.
Okay. Well, let's look at the Greek. Pull up your Greek dictionary. Mm-hmm. and read through this. If you were going to read the Greek, read this in the Greek.
En panti thalidomenoi al ustenu.
That's not what I meant.
Oh, okay. You wanted in pretend Greek. Okay.
Exactly.
This is on the fly, so. Guys, please don't write in angry letters. So we are troubled on every side. In every being constricted, but not being cramp spaced, being perplexed, but not being out perplexed. That's an interesting word. Apurimenoi. Being perplexed, exapuramenoi, being out perplexed, out perplexed, perplexed out of actually is what it's saying. It's not being outdone like that, but it's so we're perplexed, but we are not being perplexed out of this situation. In every being constructed but not being cramp-spaced, being perplexed but not being out-perplexed. Verse 9, being chased but not being abandoned.
Mm-hmm.
Being downcast but not being destroyed is the way that that would read.
Okay.
That's how I'd say it.
All right. Now, you can see I obviously did not stick strictly with the Greek.
It'd be a lot shorter. But it would take footnotes to explain it.
Exactly. But what I have done here is I have followed through with the thought, we have this treasure in earthen vessels. So the thing that Paul is trying to communicate here is that regardless of the external that's going on, there is something eternal on the inside. Now, because later, at the end of this, Paul says, we look not on the things that are temporary, but we look upon the things that are eternal.
So you're equating external things happening with temporal and internal things happening as eternal.
As eternal, yes. And that no matter how difficult it gets on the outside, the inside perspective is an eternal perspective. So not only did I take these two verses and translate them with the understanding of the Greek, but with the understanding of the context of what Paul is saying. And I had to add some things here to make sure that the emphasis of this internal treasure is spoken of as strongly as it needs to be spoken of, because he's comparing that with this external temporal things that are happening. So not a word-for-word translation. The context of this causes me to translate this way.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to give people just a little glimpse. This is what happens in my brain. So I do look up the Greek words. But see, if I looked up only the Greek words, I wouldn't have this in-depth perspective of what these two verses standing by themselves actually say.
Oh, you know, you're reminding me of Dr. Gene Scott in something he used to say quite often. That was, you can make anything say anything if you just take verses out of context. Somewhere in the Bible it says,
oh, yes,
Judas went out and hung himself, and then yeah, you can pick up another verse that says, go and do thou likewise.
Yes, but when you put it in context, those verses should be able to stand alone with the understanding of what comes before them and after them.
Mm.
All right?
Yeah.
So what we're doing here, what I wanted to do in this translation is show you there is a way to translate the Bible to where that we can stop this idiocy of taking verses out of context. And that if we include the context in the translation, then it's going to become so much clearer.
A text without context is a pretext.
Exactly. And, you know, these verses don't mean a whole lot.
Well, I could say it's a sunny day today, but we've had 2 weeks of unbroken storms. And if I just said it was a sunny day today, it wouldn't be awfully informative, but it would tell you one thing. But if I said, we've had 2 weeks straight storms in my area, and we've got more storms coming in, but today is a sunny day, if I said that, that puts a whole different meaning on the phrase, it's a sunny day.
And if you took just the phrase, today is a sunny day, out of context, and you needed to be able for that statement alone to say all of that, you would need to bring more of the expression of the statement into the sentence.
Mm, yeah.
So if you thought by any chance somebody might see, nobody knew people were going to read this verse by verse and let these stand alone. Nobody knew that, Barris.
Well, we didn't even have verses until the early 1500s.
No.
Fellow called Stephanus. We can see how his mind worked, this guy who invented chapters and verses. Well, actually, chapters preceded verses by a number of years, but you often see chapter breaks where the same thought is being actually constructed. So our chapters and and our verses are at the very best contrived and were invented in order to try and help us. But just as often as it helps us, it can also hinder us.
Exactly. So what I want you to see is my thinking about now, why did I add this expansive direction or expansive statements about the inside?
Yes, why?
I added it because of the verse before. We have this treasure in earthen vessels.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That's a profound statement that needs, for these verses, need to elaborate that a bit.
Can I go further back?
You sure may.
So verse 5 says, we don't preach ourselves, we're not putting ourselves forward, but Christ Jesus the Lord and ourselves, your servants for Jesus' sake. For God, who commanded the light to shine out of darkness. So God had something, and as Jesus said in John chapter 3, we couldn't find our backside with both hands and a flashlight, verse 19. That's the condemnation. We were in darkness and couldn't find our way out. God, who commanded the light to shine out of darkness, has shined in our hearts to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ. So this is something that God has done to bring something to us. And he says then, but we have this something that God has done to bring something to us. We have this treasure in earthen vessels.
Yes.
Fascinating.
I like vessels best.
don't tell the committee that I stumbled.
So that is why that I've added this, and it's because of the context of the statements. Now, why did I end this the way that I did? We are thrown down prostrate to the ground, but do not be fooled, I am not dead. Now, the Greek talks about that very statement in the very last part of that.
It does.
What do the last few words in the Greek say there? Are you using the – I'm using the Strong's. So.
Kataballo menoi, alok apolomenoi. In other words, being downcast, but not being destroyed.
Yeah, hold on. Let me pull this up. And let me see what I was looking at when I did this. See, this would be fun once we get this, the process of how we do it down.
That would be. And a lot of people will learn how to do this for themselves.
I know. And that's what I want more than anything, Bears.
Which is why, see, knowledge of the Greek is useful, but it's by no means complete.
Exactly. And that's what I'm wanting to show here. Okay, so the last part of this verse is the Greek word, which shows up in your Strong's exhaustive as the Greek numbers 1820. And it's EXAPOREOMAI. How do you pronounce that, Bears?
Exaporomenoi.
Now, would that be where the word exasperated comes from?
Yeah, it'd be very close to it, but it has another side to it, and that is this distress or this perplexion, perplexed but not in despair. This is a condition of the mind, being perplexed or apurumenoi. And ex apurumenoi then becomes out of this is becoming something else. So despair is coming out of a perplexion. So what we see with our eyes does not necessarily result in a mental fear or a corresponding mental negative. Does that make sense?
No, it does very much, especially with what I think what Paul is obviously what Paul's trying to communicate here is this vastness that is internal. If the internal, you see why I use those words the way that I did On the outside, we are being pressed from every side, but inside, the universe is opened up to us. Because this is the thought that Paul is communicating.
Did you ever see Doctor Who?
Yes.
You know what the TARDIS is then?
No.
The TARDIS was his little time-space travel machine, and it looked for all the world like an English telephone box. It's very much like an old story that I remember about a little girl on a pier, and somebody walked up, and she was having – she had this huge, big thing of cotton candy, and she's getting it into herself, and the bloke said, "That's a lot of cotton candy for a little girl." And the little girl looks back at him and says, "You know, I'm a lot bigger on the inside than I am on the outside." Well, that was what the TARDIS was. When you got inside, you opened the door of this English telephone box, you got inside and suddenly you had this huge spaceship in there. It was bigger on the inside than it is on the outside. And this is kind of what this verse is saying.
And it's such a profound statement that the inside, the smaller inside, is bigger than the big outside. So you got to have more words to say that in English.
Mate, you just can't. It's very interesting. Greek music of the day had between 3 and 5 different tones for every one tone we have in our 12-note scale or our 11-note scale. And their words were the same. Their words, they have 9 words for, Koine Greek, classical Greek, had 9 words for what we use as love. We only use 4 or 5 of them in the Bible, but and each one was a nuanced. And so you needed a whole bunch less words in Greek than you do in English.
Yes. So is there a reason, Barris, that we could not just go and get the full meaning from this by translating direct Greek word for direct translation? Is something lost in translation just not taking into consideration context and translating just the Greek words?
Oh, inevitably, you're going to lose something by doing a word-for-word straight translation without any explanatory words. You're going to be using a lot more adverbs and adjectives, not so much nouns, but especially adjectives. You're going to be using a lot more of them in English than you would.
So this issue of context should cause each of these words to explode.
Correct. Yes.
It should cause a Greek word to explode.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only way I can say it. When you look at that Greek word, the Strong's Greek word that 1820, that means to be in despair.
Yep.
The Strong's goes back to the words that were put together to make that word.
So what happens in any language, and I was going to say Australian, and English does it perfectly, beautifully from both Latin and Greek, and that they'll take a basic root.
Yep, yep.
And then you'll add a prefix or a suffix or whatever it is. So let's say you have the word pound, which is a place where you hold things, a dog pound. Uh-huh. But then if you put com in front of it, which is a Latin prefix meaning to come together, then you've got a compound.
Yes.
And then if you want to turn that into a verb, you'll use a suffix, ing, compounding. And so this is how words are built, and that's what you're explaining. The Greek does exactly the same.
And then the Strong's bear springs out, which comes from other Greek words from 1537 and 639, which means to be utterly at a loss. So you see, suddenly this word begins to explode, to be utterly at a loss, to be despondent, despair. So for us to take this one word, which was translated the word despair, and to realize that to let this word flower in translation based on context and Greek, it needs to have more in it, such as the definition of the middle voice of this, to be utterly at loss. So you see why that I added that expression of utter desperation, not just despair, but this, we not only are in despair, there's no way out. There is no way out. And so then from there, then at the bottom of this, the way that I translated this was to emphasize the fact that we are thrown down prostrate to the ground, but don't be fooled, we're not dead. Now,
well, the other thing is that in the Greek, the middle voice simply means what the subject is doing to him, to themselves, what I am doing to myself. This is one of the little wrinkles that Greek has that English not so obvious. But so I am cast down, but I am not destroyed. I am persecuted, but I'm not forsaken. I don't have to do anything to myself. I can simply be the observer in my own life because I can see this huge inside of me and what's happening there.
And the term not destroyed it means to die.
That comes from the same Greek word apolumi, which is to totally destroy. And sometimes we see that used in relation to the destruction of the soul in hell and all of that sort of stuff. We see that word used in that respect. So it really does. It means totally destroy.
Yes. And he's saying we're all the way to that point, but not that. We're all the way there. So I translated that. We are thrown prostrate to the ground.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we're not dead. We look dead. Everything about this translation would say they're dead, except they're not.
Yeah, well, we have no hope, but yep. We're not dead.
Yeah. And now the reason that I translated that, that we're knocked prostrate to the ground is because then he says, always bearing, which I didn't translate this now, always bearing about in the body the dying of the Lord Jesus. Now I understand what he means.
Mm-hmm.
How does he bear about in his body the dying of Jesus? So he's simply referring to the persecution of them being knocked down physically to the point of death, bearing about in the body the dying, not the death, but the dying of the Lord Jesus.
Yeah.
That the life of Jesus might be made manifest in our body. So what he's saying is, then see the why I translated that way, he's saying, yes, inside it's eternal. Inside it's so vast, it's so big. Outside we are pressed to where that we're not only persecuted, we're pursued to be persecuted. And that's it. The Greek brings out that not just persecuted, we're pursued for that purpose.
Yeah, well, and Paul knew that what that was like because he used to do it.
And then when you end this up, see this last verse, when you end that up, that we are knocked down to the ground prostrate but not totally dead, then you understand why he starts the next verse, we're bearing about in our body the dying of Jesus Christ.
Mm.
See, without the letting the Greek context flower in the verse before, you can start a whole new doctrine out of verse 11.
Nope. Well, and thousands have.
So in this translation, what I want to show you is, see, folks, it really is easy. There's nothing. Now Barris and I deliberately would not. Barris asked me last night because Barris is the producer of this show. He wants it to go well. And surprises are not a good thing for somebody that's producing a show. But he understood why I wanted to do this off the cuff. Now, the one thing that we've learned, too, is we've learned a lot better how to do this live, and we'll do it again if you want us to. Now, if you don't want us to, please write in and say, Barris, please don't ever let Mike translate another verse. We don't want that. Because if you don't, I'm going to.
You know, I'm just reading on down through this chapter. This is magnificent.
It's impossible not to, right?
It's magnificent, mate.
See what this does for you?
Magnificent. It's an old English friend of mine. You say, magnificent, absolutely magnificent. I'm just gobsmacked. Verse 14, knowing that he which raised up the Lord Jesus shall raise us up yes. also by Jesus and shall present us with you. So together we have this death thing that has happened on the outside. We have this life thing that has happened on the inside. For all things, oh, so that the abundant grace might through the thanksgiving of, oh, gee, this is good stuff, mate.
And see, the verse that you just read, see, that's actually, see, I'm so glad you did this because that's the one I actually wanted to point to as to why I translated, we are the same as dead.
Mm.
Because knowing that he which raised up Jesus shall also raise us up. He's not talking about being raised up from the dead in a next life.
Mm-hmm.
He's talking about being raised up from this death-like state from persecution. So, see, this verse, 14, out of context, that's an end-time verse.
It is an end-time. Just this morning I was reading the Apostles' Creed. Now, the Apostles' Creed was the first recorded creed in the Christian church. Now, creeds were created in order to give people a confession. This is what I believe. And if you would say the creed, then I'll accept you as my brother. It was a pretty manipulative sort of thing. But it still stated in fairly concise terms the beliefs of people. The very first, now you'll remember out of the epistle, now you'll remember out of the Apostles' Creed is a part that says, for the age to come. But that wasn't in the original Apostles' Creed. There were many updates and many versions. And in the original Apostles' Creed, it says, for the aeon.
Mm, yeah.
Not a coming aeon, which was changed later to, I may be muddying the waters here, but was changed later to reflect theology rather than
exactly.
The earliest belief of redemptionism.
Yeah. Well, and as you see now here, now, folks, I do not claim any right over understanding the Greek any more than any one of our listeners do. But what I wanted you to see, and we brought this out before Barris, and I knew I was going to either be embarrassed or Barris was going to chide me or something. But because he knew my stance on this, I'm not looking to be right. I want you to see how easy it is to understand these things. It breaks my heart when people tell me, Michael, when you read it, I understand it. But sometimes when I go back and read it myself, I don't get it. But see.
Oh, that's, yeah, I hear that.
Yes. But I wanted you to see how this process takes place. And we're not pulling this out of thin air. We just took two simple verses that saying two profoundly simple things. And we let the Greek, within its context, bloom. You've got to let that happen. Because without it, you're only seeing these words in seed form and trying to imagine what it's going to look like when it's in full bloom.
Well, good point.
So that's all that we do. When I read these things in context, I let it bloom. Just let it bloom. You're not trying to alter or change anything. Just let it be in full bloom. Because what will cause you to see it in full bloom? The Greek definition is helpful, but the most important thing to that is context. If you let the context put the emphasis on the Greek, you will have no problems reading through this for yourself. And, hey, you know, we may get to liking this so much, we may just have a Gospel Revolution translation of the Bible.
Very interesting stuff. Mate, I am thinking of this as we're talking. As you said to people today, it really is not rocket science. Years ago, I used to love getting my parallel. I had a 5 or 6 version parallel. I had the Amplified and the King Jimmy and a few others. And I would take a phrase out of this one, a phrase out of that one, and then compare it with the original and then say, I can live with that. That's a good translation from multiple sources. But in the whole process, I'd say this. When it comes to words, you've got a perfectly good tool in the Strong's dictionary, which you can get free
exactly
on a computer now. when it comes to words, compare words with words. You can take in any good Bible program, you can take the Strong's number, put that into your search bar, search every instance of that in both the old...
Every place.
You can do it in the Septuagint, which gives you the whole Old Testament too. And certainly you can do it all in the New Testament, which gives you every single instance of that word. And now you can compare a word against a word with the context in various places. That is going to... I'll tell you right now, that is going to blow... the BS of the doctrine of the institutional church to kingdom come. Secondly, and that's words, compare words with words. With thoughts, compare thoughts with context.
Yes, good, BS.
You have to compare your thoughts with a context, or as we said earlier, a text without context is a pretext, and you can build any darn doctrine you want to. When it comes to principles, so that's words and thoughts, when it comes to principles, compare every time with the scriptures. Is this what the scriptures said? Is this what the law, the Psalms, and the prophets, what Jesus identified as the scriptures? Is there anything in there that relates to this? If there isn't, just put it on the back burner. And if there is, it's a great commentary.
Exactly. Now, I want to know, do you have that criteria written down, or did you just come up with that from your years of research?
Yeah, I just wrote it down on an envelope right now.
You just now wrote it down.
Yeah.
And, well, let me tell you, we need two things done. We need to publish the two verses on the website or, you know, whatever. And then, right under that, we need to have you to put the criteria for doing such a thing. Because, Barris, and what you said there about the thought, read number two to me again.
So you've got words which make up thoughts, but when it comes to thoughts, compare with context.
Compare. When it comes to thoughts, compare with context. You just don't know. This is ringing so loudly inside of me. Because, Barris, sometimes when I'm up teaching, I feel as though I am attempting to rein in everybody's thoughts to the subject. Because you know how many times, you'll be up teaching or something, and you'll read a verse, and somebody who disagrees with you, all of a sudden it's like they're flipping in their Bible, reading their Bible, and talking to the person next to them. And saying, well, but this is more than just a teaching of the Greek. It's more than just a teaching of a principle. It is teaching ourselves how to think through these things. It's what the whole gospel revolution is about. How to think. Is there a way of thinking that is productive? Is there a way of thinking that you can always come up with an accurate translation? Yes. And so I think we're going to be on this for some time. And I'd love to do it just for the fun of it, just with what we come out of this with, just two verses, two pretty obscure, seemingly meaningless verses, but you see, the reason I picked those is because they are transitional from a solid statement about the eternal, and they are transitional to the solid statement about the temporal, and then how it affects the temporal. That even this is so powerful, we may be knocked down to the ground, prostrate. You may identify us as dead, but guess what? The same power that raised Jesus up is going to raise us up again.
We're bigger on the inside than we are on the outside.
Yay, Jesus.
If we have come out of religion, doesn't matter what the name of the religion was, but particularly out of Christianity, if we look at a passage in that holy book, or the holy book that was our holy book at the time, if we look at that, we look at a passage, there is something which is going to automatically kick in. You can't help
exactly.
It. You have neural pathways in your mind, and they are preset by years and years of construction. You can't tear down that thought that keeps coming in. When you read, let's say you hear Mike Williams teach on a certain subject, and you said, that's not what it said. I'm going to go and check it. And you find out it's exactly what it said. It's just that you never saw it that way before. You go away for a while, and then you come back, and what do you remember? You don't remember what you learned from Mike Williams. What you remember is what you were taught by your religion.
Exactly.
These mindsets, these paradigms are so strong. But if you want to break a paradigm, if you want to break that once and for all, do what we're saying today and just get into any passage you want. You're worried about hell? You're wondering about the rapture? Go to whatever your religion's favorite text-proofing passage was and do this with it. Just translate it yourself.
Oh.
And what you're going to find is that good old Bible between the black calf leather covers was maybe not quite as perfect and inerrant as you thought it was.
Mm-hmm. But what is in there is extremely, extremely powerful, and every one of you can relate to it. You know, Barris, I have now I don't know where this came from. I learned it by accusation of people hearing me teach. And they said, Mike Williams, you know what you do? You just get up there and drop a bomb and the whole thing explodes. And then you go around picking up the pieces saying what it's all about.
That's not what they said about me when I went around preaching. They said about me, they said, you preachers are all the same. You come and drop a bomb and then I've got to clean the mess up.
Then you got to clean the mess up. Believe me, I've done that too. But there is a method behind this madness. And that is, see, our minds are so stuck in those ruts that it requires. I heard somebody say the other day, I don't know who it was. I swore I would remember, and I'm going to butcher it probably a bit, but the meaning is there. He said, when the jaw drops, the brain is ready to be reprogrammed.
That's good.
When the jaw drops, what does that mean? That means the brain's ready to be reprogrammed. So I realized, boy, there is a method to this madness that I'm trapped in. You can call it divine or you can just call it just Mike Williams. I don't care. But it requires that grabbing of attention. And then, man, I wish I could convey how that feels to stand in front of people and hope with everything that's in you, that you have the ability to hold their concentration on the subject long enough to where they can see it for themselves. But man, I'm telling you what, and that's what is going through me the entire time that I'm teaching. Am I doing this at a rate, a pace, and with emphasis strong enough to where that I'm able to capture the attention to where that they can stop and think about something else other than the way they always thought it was. And that's what's in me all the time when I'm up teaching. And there's an angst to it. I admit that. There is an angst to it. I once I get to teaching, everybody knows I have a panic disorder about getting up in front of people. But once I'm up there, there's nothing quite so beautiful as to actually see that happen. But the weird thing is, Barris, every time I stand up, I am in great doubt. Every time I stand up, I'm in the greatest doubt that I have the ability to pull that off.
It's a very strong place to actually stand in when you understand that there are many people out there. What did one person say? The trouble with the world today is that all of the very smart people are full of doubts, and all of the fools have no doubts at all.
Man, I've felt that standing right up in front of people, and at the last moment, you know that. You know, you're laying there like dead before people, and you're either going to be brought back to life by their understanding. By their understanding, you'll be brought back to life, or you'll just be dead. It is so strange. I know this sounds crazy, folks.
Not very encouraging, even if it is simple.
It is amazing to bring something like this out of you, literally offering your life.
Yes.
Into other people's lives. To the point where that the only way you can live is if they offer you that life back again. By understanding what you're saying.
One in three people listening to this program may actually understand what you just said.
Yeah, and to the rest, I apologize, you know, because the one thing I don't like is sounding heady because this isn't heady. That's what we're trying to say. But it is profound. It is eternal. We're not talking about just things. So we have to describe it in ways that are almost otherworldly because it is otherworldly.
Michael, can we reread those two verses in your translation? In the MWM No, you're going to read them. I hope you read them because this will go down, you know, in 500 years' time, this tape will be played. You've got to hear it in your voice, buddy.
Okay. 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 7 and 8. We are being crushed from the outside by a multitude of troubles to the point that it feels like an outraged throng of people pressing in from every possible direction. Yet on the inside, it feels like the entire universe has opened up to us. We are indeed at a complete and utter loss without any way out of our troubles. But inside, it feels just the opposite. We not only are persecuted, we are pursued for the self-same purpose. Yet inside, there is no feeling of being left behind nor deserted. We are thrown down prostrate to the ground. But do not be fooled. We are not dead.
Gospel Revolution.
And so it is that we must leave you, family and friends. Don't forget to visit www.onemikewilliams.com and get your copy of Mike's book, One, The Gospel According to Mike. Hardcover $27, paperback $16, and Kindle edition $3.03. You know, you, our listeners, are the real stars of the Gospel Revolution. You may be a virgin listener or have been following the message for years, but if you're a virgin giver, I'd like to ask you to break the drought and call our office at area code 321-220-4373 and speak to Jeffrey about how you can join the amazing people who keep this gospel of grace and peace going out every week. $1 a day, nothing to most people, but to us it makes all the difference between business as usual and reaching so many more ears with the sounds of freedom. You want to leave a message for Mike or question for him to answer? Dial area code 234-564-0971 and leave a voicemail. Our web address is www.gospelrevolution.com and on Facebook at Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution. Thanks to Marcel Roos in the Netherlands, all the gospel all the time is being broadcast 24/7 at myradiostream.com/gospelrevolution. So now, it's good night from myself, Beres Bartlett, from the GR Studios here in Nashville, Tennessee.
And it's good night from here in Houston from Michael Williams. Thank you, guys. I hope that the communication of our love to you is accurate enough to where that you can see that it is real, because it indeed is very real. Those of you contributing to the pledge drive, we are so grateful. I got a call, Beres, this week, and I'll be able to follow up on this story possibly on the next PowerCast, but I got a call and somebody wanted to donate $250 to our friends in Kenya, and they said, how do we do that? And I said, all you have to do is deposit that in PayPal, and I will turn right around and send it directly off to them. That happened yesterday evening. They deposited it in a PayPal. I clicked on in 2 minutes and saw it wasn't PayPal. And before 5 minutes was up, $250 was shipped off to Kenya to help the ministry there and our folks that are in the middle of a war zone and sharing the gospel in such powerful ways. And we love you, Moses and Liz and the boys and you guys, any of you guys that want to send your love their way, just all you got to do is let me know. And thank you so much for all that you do and allowing me and Barris to come and just jump on our Schwinn bicycles and ride around your block. So, because that's all we're doing.
If you'd like to know how to connect with PayPal to do that, just email Jeffrey at freedom@gospelrevolution.com and he will take care of that for you. Well, we hope you enjoyed today's PowerCast, but if you didn't, remember, just because you're offended does not mean you are right. So if you prefer learning how to think to being told what to think, then join us again next week, same time, same channel, where we're going to do the same thing all over again.
I bet it's better.
Thank you, friend. That was bloody powerful.
It was. I had an inkling it might turn out really, 'cause all I was doing is trying to duplicate what I do in my private time that winds up on CD, because it does. It's hard for me, Barris, to hear that people say that when they hear me, it's so clear. But sometimes when they go back and read their own Bible, it just isn't. Now, I understand that because of all of these preconceived notions. And even though they know it, they go back and they read it again. And because they can't read it in context still yet, it just, most of them just stay away from it altogether. And I don't want that to happen. I want them to see it themselves. And I know you feel that responsibility. We would all like to defer that responsibility. But the fact of it is, that's how serious we've got to be about what we say to these folks. And I know that you are. But that's the whole heart of this thing, you know. I've never in my life about anything in my life felt more like a spectator about anything more than the thing that is the most important thing to my life. And that's sharing this gospel. I've never brought into focus what Mike Williams looks like and the gospel. I don't know what that looks like. I can't pull it into focus, and I don't think I ever will, because only thing I can do is stand outside and watch all of this happen anyway. And it truly is the most amazing trip I've ever been on. Yeah, it really has been. And I know that it provokes people to think. I know it helps people to think. And boy, every time you make a comment that we're trying to help you learn how to think, and those statements, that just rings so true, because there is a way to think, and it can be productive. It can be powerful. Give my love to the lady.
Gospel Revolution.